Today is Tuesday, March 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Over 115,000 people around the world have contracted the COVID-19 coronavirus.
I think our safest assumption at this point is that anyone can get this virus.
Well, the latest updates and how the virus is affecting the global economy. Plus, Democrats are back at the polls as frontrunners Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders vie for their party's nomination.
Let's win the primary. Let's win the nomination. Let's defeat Trump.
We'll have all those stories and a whole lot more next. Chinese President Xi Jinping made his first visit to Wuhan Tuesday, where the coronavirus outbreak forced an unprecedented lockdown of the central city of 11 million people, in a sign that authorities' efforts to control the virus are working. Local reporting said Xi's arrival came the same day that Wuhan shut the last of 14 makeshift hospitals open to manage the surge in coronavirus patients that had overwhelmed the city's healthcare system. During the visit, Xi Jinping said that the first steps of goals to stabilize and turn around the situation in Hubei and Wuhan have been achieved, and work to control the virus in the city of Wuhan and the surrounding Hubei province remained arduous. Earlier, China announced that it had just 19 new coronavirus infections Monday, down from 40 a day earlier. Iran said that the new coronavirus had killed 54 new people, raising the death toll to 291 out of 8,042 cases in the Islamic Republic. Iran is the hardest-hit Mideast country. Globally, there are at least 115,825 cases, according to the Center for Systems Science and Engineering at Johns Hopkins University. Turning to Europe, all of Italy is under lockdown and tougher self-quarantine measures in Israel made clear how the global coronavirus epidemic was extending its reach. Reuters' Chris Dingham takes things from here.
La decisione giusta oggi è di restare a casa.
Italy's prime minister on Monday announced that travel restrictions would be imposed across the entire country just a day after locking down much of northern Italy, security measures that were already considered drastic.
Non ci sarà più una zona rossa.
There will not be any more Zone 1 or Zone 2 in the country. It will be Italy. Italy is a protected zone.
Un'Italia zona protetta.
The announcement made Italy the first country to restrict movement nationwide, a dramatic new clampdown aimed at halting the rapidly spreading coronavirus in Europe's worst affected country. The unprecedented restrictions, which ban all public gatherings and require people not to travel except for work or emergencies, come after an alarming jump in deaths tied to the highly infectious disease in Italy, with the death toll there reaching 463, more than a quarter of which were reported in the past 24 hours. Italy has more than 9,000 confirmed cases of the coronavirus, putting the national health system under massive strain.
We're encouraged that Italy is taking aggressive measures.
In Geneva, the World Health Organization's director said on Monday that the coronavirus is now closer to causing a pandemic.
Now that the virus has a foothold in so many countries, the threat of a pandemic has become very real. But it would be the first pandemic in history that could be controlled.
In Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Monday also announced more aggressive measures to stop the spread of the coronavirus, requiring all citizens who return from abroad to self-quarantine.
After a day of complex discussions, we made a decision. Anyone who arrives in Israel from abroad will enter a 14-day isolation.
Israel had already taken some of the most extreme precautions to prevent a local coronavirus outbreak, forcing visitors from many countries in Asia and Europe into isolation. In the United States, passengers aboard the Grand Princess cruise ship that was barred last week from returning to its home port of San Francisco due to an outbreak of the virus on board waved and cheered as the ship docked at the nearby port of Oakland on Monday, while tents and workers wearing protective clothing waited for them on shore. 21 people on the ship, mostly crew, tested positive on Friday for coronavirus, in an initial round of screenings performed on about 45 people with symptoms. The remaining passengers will be tested and monitored for signs of the illness once they reach the next unexpected phase of their voyage, 2 weeks at a quarantine station.
That was Reuters reporter Chris Dingham. In France, 5 members of parliament have tested positive for the COVID-19 coronavirus. I recently spoke to reporter Nico Pino in Paris about how this happened and what the government is doing in reaction to it ahead of this weekend's local election.
These 5 lawmakers, most of them, they come from eastern part of France. And that's how the French culture minister has been contracted, because last week he was mentioning and talking a lot about the law that is presenting in front of the parliament. And people, they are thinking that's how he got infected by the virus, especially at the restaurant inside the French parliament, because also one of the employees has been tested positive with the virus.
So what kind of impact is this having? Because you just mentioned that one of the employees that was inside Parliament had the virus and wound up through whatever means transmitting it to members of Parliament. So how is government functioning and what kind of impact is it having?
So as of right now, because of local election, the French Parliament, there is a recess for 2 weeks. But it has an impact on the daily activities for the French government because, for example, the French culture minister, he's teleworking because he cannot go to the weekly meeting, the cabinet meeting in Paris. And there's also huge precautions measures around the French president. He has canceled many activities with public. And, for example, this is funny, but inside the French presidency, they always take care that he doesn't have the same pen every day because it can contract, you know, the virus.
So they're worried about transmission through physical objects, so they're keeping switching things out.
That is correct. And as of right now, his Emmanuel Macron's trips, they are very limited, only around the coronavirus. So as of today, he went to visit a 911 dispatch center in France, you know, because he wants to look that is very proactive on the crisis. He wants to show people that they shouldn't be afraid, that, of course, you have some activities that's going to be canceled or changed.
Speaking of trying to encourage people not to be afraid, these are members of parliament, and you think about the security that goes into protecting the president, protecting members of parliament. How are people reacting to the news that 5 members of parliament have the COVID-19 virus?
Well, on one side, you got people saying, you know, they like us people, you know, they also could be infected, contaminated by the virus. But on the other hand, it's a little bit scary for French people because you tend to see more and more people getting the virus. It's not as serious as it is in Italy right now.
What's the largest concern that people have out there? I mean, because when you look at precautions taking place around the world, a lot of organizations and events of more than 1,000 people are being canceled. Are there concerns by the electorate in France about what may happen to spread the coronavirus during the election period since you have so many people coming in and out of polling places?
Well, as of right now, people, they won't be able to be as close as 1 meter to each other in 2 polling stations. And you're right, it's going to be very tricky to respect. French authorities, they also call for people to bring their own pens to sign the register inside the polling station. So, of course, the election is going to be very tricky. Participation rate also is going to be something that people, they're going to look, because in a poll, in a survey, up to 28% of people in the survey would say that they would not go to vote on Sunday because of fear of the transmission of the coronavirus.
That was Nico Pino speaking to me from Paris. Columbia University epidemiologist Dr. Elizabeth Radin tells VOA that while a large number of cases of COVID-19 affect men, older populations, and those with underlying health problems, the virus may not be limited to just those populations.
I think our safest assumption at this point is that anyone can get this virus. I think the idea that the virus is limited to certain groups is coming from 2 factors. Well, one, if we look at the patient population, the confirmed cases that we know about, we do see that there are more confirmed cases among certain groups. However, we have seen infections certainly across genders, across the age spectrum, from very young children to much older people. And looking at the patient population only allows us to see who's being diagnosed. So for now, we should assume that anyone could be at risk for the virus.
Now, turning to economic news, Australian airline Qantas announced that it will cut its international capacity by nearly 25% over the next 6 months and delay an order for Airbus A350 planes, which are all part of sweeping changes in response to a decline in passenger demand because of the COVID-19. Its chairman and chief executive, Alan Joyce, will forgo salary for the rest of the fiscal year.
We'll be trying to avoid redundancies as best we can. We are in this situation with this schedule, having over 2,000 people that are surplus to that schedule.
Now, after a market correction last week and a massive sell-off on Monday, Asian stocks rebounded Tuesday. U.S. exchanges were mixed in midday trading and European markets closed down. Now, to understand why, I earlier spoke with David Wilcox, non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
I think it'd be a fool's errand to try to predict where the stock market will be tomorrow, much less a month from now. But my guess is that we're in the process of investors coming to grips with a clearer perception of the reality of how serious this situation is. Even with the market being down considerably from its peak of roughly 10 days or so ago, we're still only about where we were at the beginning of last year. So I think it's, if anything, perhaps a little surprising that the market hasn't gone down by more in light of the extraordinary uncertainty that surrounds this situation.
People are very fond in saying the market is not the economy. What's your analysis as to what is the overall health of the global economy and how prepared is it for a long duration of interruption?
It's a great question, and a troubling aspect of this situation is that the familiar plays in the policy playbook just aren't very well suited for this kind of a situation. To take one example, monetary policy, which is oftentimes the sort of first resort in a time of economic weakness, operates with a pretty lengthy lag. 4 to 6 to 8 quarters is the typical estimate, and we just don't have that kind of time. Fiscal policy can oftentimes operate much more quickly, but the kinds of conventional fiscal policy moves are not well suited for this kind of a situation where the initial impact is going to be so disparate across different segments of the population. Just to take one quick example, there are going to be a lot of workers who don't have access to paid sick leave, and so designing a response that's customized and tailored to meet that kind of a situation is going to be a critically important challenge.
If we take a look just at the U.S. economy, because it is the world's largest, you see that 10-year yield, that inverse curve there. How important is it for the long-term effects of keeping the American economy going? You know, how long can it stay inverted before it needs to turn around?
Well, the fact that the 10-year yield is so low is absolutely critically important in one respect, that is that it's a great metric for showing just how little policy space the Federal Reserve has to boost the economy by dropping interest rates. There just isn't a lot of room at the moment. We're definitely flashing at least amber at this point in terms of the scope for the Fed, which, as I say, is usually sort of the macroeconomic first responder in situations like this. Fed's going to have very limited scope for action.
That's David Wilcox, a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. A task force set up by Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe on Tuesday approved a $4.1 billion package that includes support for small to medium-sized businesses and includes subsidies for parents who need to take time off from work due to school closures. And U.S. President Donald Trump is meeting with Congress today and businesses to help. identify plans for individuals and companies who suffer financially as a result from the COVID-19 outbreak. And still to come to the program,
a report submitted to the United Nations Human Rights Council Monday documents the harsh treatment and abusive conditions of detention facing activists and opponents of the Iranian government.
You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A few months ago, some astronomers noted that the star Betelgeuse was decreasing in brightness. This set off speculation that the red supergiant star was getting ready to explode into a spectacular supernova. A new study from a pair of astronomers suggests that the dimming of Betelgeuse isn't due to it cooling down and readying to go supernova, but that it's just dusty. The astronomers analyzed data from recent observations and calculated that the average surface temperature of the star was much warmer than expected if cooling was indeed the cause of the dimming. Their calculations also suggest that, like many red supergiant stars, Betelgeuse was shedding material from its outer layers. This material later condenses into dust that surrounds the star and can obscure some of its visible light. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Americans are back at the polling stations today in several states as the race to become the Democratic nominee for president continues to intensify. Contests are being held in six states: Missouri, Michigan, Mississippi, Washington State, Idaho, and North Dakota. Former Vice President Joe Biden is the current frontrunner with about 670 pledged delegates, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is a close second at 574. Campaigning in Missouri, Sanders rallied his supporters.
Let's go forward tomorrow. Let's win the primary. Let's win the nomination. Let's defeat Trump. Let's transform this country.
And speaking in Michigan, Mr. Biden touted his comeback and frontrunner status with aspirations of ending President Trump's tenure in office.
Days of Donald Trump's divisiveness are soon going to be over.
And when he's gone, we'll come back. We'll get back on the roll of building that more perfect union.
Now joining us in the studio with more on the contest being held today and the possible effects that might have in the future on the candidate field is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve.
So what can you tell us about this, I guess, like mini Tuesday with six contests?
Yeah, the big prize definitely is Michigan. We've gone through a number of smaller states early in the process here, but now we start to hit into these bigger industrial states. This is a state that Bernie Sanders did well in 4 years ago in the race with Hillary Clinton. He actually surprised her there. The question is this time, the party looks like it's starting to coalesce behind Joe Biden, and Sanders has to find a way to sort of stem Biden's momentum. Their best chance may come in Michigan, and if Biden prevails there, and the polls suggest he's well ahead, it could get increasingly difficult for Sanders to find a way to sort of get back into the race.
And talk about getting back into the race. I mean, right now they're only about 100 delegates apart, and it's still early in the primary season. If Sanders does well in the other states besides Michigan, is there enough wiggle room there for him to remain competitive?
He's not likely to do well in Mississippi. He's not likely to do well in Missouri. So right there, you've got some states with larger number of delegates that look like they're going to lean toward Joe Biden. He hopes to do well in Washington State, a state he did well in 4 years ago. But some of these states used to have caucuses that tends to benefit the Sanders people who are very excited and committed, and they get out there to these caucus meetings. But now some of them, like Washington, have switched to primaries, and that's probably going to help Biden a little bit, at least be competitive. The problem is, unless Bernie Sanders starts winning these states by very large margins, he's not going to accrue the delegate margins in order to make real inroads on Biden's lead. That's why the Michigan test is so important on Tuesday.
Now, speaking of tests coming up, Florida's still in the mix. That's another huge delegate state. What is that shaping up to look like at this point?
Florida is seen as a real advantage for Biden, and Bernie Sanders probably did not help help himself with his comments about Castro. Some very energized Cuban-American voters down there don't take well to praising the Cuban government. So Sanders probably will look next week to make inroads in Ohio, maybe Illinois, certainly in Arizona, where he's benefited from Latino voting in the past. But again, if Michigan is an indicator, if it goes well or strongly for Biden, there's a good chance that both Illinois and Ohio are going to follow in that regard. So Sanders needs to make a stop now if he can. Otherwise, this thing is going to start to cascade away from him.
We'll see what happens in the weeks to come. Jim Malone is VOA's national correspondent. Thank you once more for joining us in the studio.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Disgraced Australian Cardinal George Pell will have one last chance to clear his name Wednesday when the nation's highest court takes up his appeal on his convictions on sexually assaulting two teenage choir boys. He was sentenced exactly 1 year ago this month to 6 years in prison. The United States began withdrawing troops from Afghanistan, taking a step forward on its peace deal with the Taliban, while also praising Afghan President Ashraf Ghani's promise to start releasing Taliban prisoners after he had delayed that for over a week. The U.S.-Taliban deal signed February 29th was touted as Washington's effort to end 18 years of war in Afghanistan. Ghani and his main political rival, Abdullah Abdullah, were each sworn in as president in separate ceremonies Monday, and the two inaugurations have thrown plans for talks with the Taliban into chaos, although Ghani said Tuesday that he'd start putting together a negotiating team. A Jerusalem district court on Tuesday rejected Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's request to delay the start of his corruption trial, ruling it would begin as planned next week. Netanyahu's lawyers had appealed for a delay, saying they needed more time to review evidence. State prosecutors responded that they oppose any delays, and the court accepted their position.
A report submitted to the United Nations Human Rights Council on Monday documents the harsh treatment and abusive conditions of detention facing activists and opponents of the Iranian government. Lisa Schlein has that story.
UN Special Rapporteur on the human rights situation in Iran, Javed Rehman, notes people who have peacefully protested for better economic conditions have been arbitrarily arrested and imprisoned. Others detained include Iranian women who have protested against wearing the veil, human rights defenders, lawyers, journalists, and those who seemingly oppose the government. He says ethnic and religious minorities also are among a long list of dissidents who run afoul of the Iranian authorities and are often imprisoned. Raymond says he is deeply concerned about what he considers to be subhuman conditions of detention. He says the frequent use of solitary confinement and the use of torture to extract forced confessions are alarming.
Overcrowding, poor nutrition, and a lack of hygiene are also serious concerns. These issues indicate a high risk to prisoners' health from malnutrition and disease. Recent reports indicate that the COVID-19 virus has spread inside Iranian prisons.
The latest report by the World Health Organization puts the number of confirmed cases of coronavirus in Iran at 5,823, including 145 deaths. The UN investigator also expresses dismay that children are still being sentenced to death. He notes international law absolutely prohibits applying the death penalty to juvenile offenders. And yet, he says, two Iranian boys aged 17 were executed last year, and more than 100 child offenders reportedly are in death row. He urges Iran to uphold its human rights obligations and to bring detention conditions and practices up to international standards. Iranian ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Esmaikil Baghbache Hamanch, dismisses the report as another targeted display of abusive misinformation about the state of human rights in his country. He describes the report as a patchwork of sporadic cases of alleged violations with the help of biased sources. He says the report is far from being a faithful reflection of Iran's continuing progress in the realm of human rights. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, and engineer Bill Andrade, Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. Just point your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.